Views expressed on this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of this station, its management, or other advertisers.
You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.
There is an old belief that the universe is made of stories, not atoms. Dialogue Radio with Dr. Jeff is a show that's about the stories of the universe. Dr. Jeff asks us to engage in the storytelling process of Dialogue, an epic conversation on self, society, and sustainability. In an era of going green, what do we make when we tell stories of healing the world and transforming ourselves? How do stories influence personal and social evolution? What does it mean to take a storytelling perspective on sustainability? Dr. Jeff offers stories of wisdom, healing, and transformation, and engages others to tell stories of what it means to be human and weavers of the fabric of the world, Gaia. Expect the provocative, educational, transformative, and mythic with Dr. Jeff. Get ready to expand the imagination, heal the heart, and inspire personal, social, and planetary evolution. Now, here's your host, Dr. Jeff Lineweaver.
Hello, everyone. I'm Dr. Jeff Lineweaver, and you're listening to Dialogue Radio on Transformation Talk Radio. Join us as we engage in one of the oldest acts known to humanity, and that of storytelling, where we sit together as a community and listen to the old myths, the old stories, as well as new stories and stories of epic reinvention. Every Monday at 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern on Dialogue Radio, we'll have some of the most gifted storytellers, social entrepreneurs, change agents, speakers, and authors helping you make sustainability epic. And today, we have an amazing story to really kind of corkscrew our way into. And we're going to be joined by storyteller and video storyteller and researcher, Alan Honick, here today to talk about his work on the research and story of the evolution of fairness in society. Welcome, Alan.
Hello. Thank you for having me on.
Well, it's great to have you on, and I think that your work is so timely in today's world. And so you have just recently published in Pacific Standard Magazine the beginning of some research that you've been working on, really doing multimedia research on this, the notion of fairness and how this has evolved in society. And when I personally think of sustainability, I think one word to describe sustainability on a planet of soon to be 9 billion people is fair. So, you know, how did we get here? What did you know? How did you get interested in this study of fairness?
Well, actually, Jeff, it was largely through an interest in sustainability that I first started to think about fairness. I'd been working on developing an idea, a video documentary sort of idea, with an old friend of mine, a scientist named Gordon Oriens. And we got together frequently and would discuss what we could do. Gordon is a scientist and environmentalist, me as a filmmaker, that might address issues of sustainability, might really bring a scientific perspective to try to solve some of those problems. And we couldn't ever quite arrive at the right idea, something that really appealed to both of us. And one day I just started thinking about fairness. I started thinking about it in the context of that, you know, underlying a lot of issues of sustainability are disputes, conflicts. People don't agree over, you know, how to generate energy, how to deal with agriculture, all the issues that affect sustainability. And I started to think that underlying almost all conflicts and disputes are basic disagreements over what's fair. You know, excuse me. Anyway, that's a perspective. And so I started thinking about fairness, started to research fairness. And this was, you know, around the time that, you know, the recession and people were, you know, the inequality was becoming more of an issue. And, you know, one way I kind of, you know, explain it to people today is you look at two of the main groups that are activists in American society today. You've got the Tea Party on one side, in a sense, and Occupy Wall Street on another. And if you read their literature and what their spokesmen say, they both use the word fair a lot over what they think is fair, but they both mean very different things by it. And so thinking about that sort of thing, thinking about the fact that fairness lies at the root of so many conflicts and disputes, I started to wonder, is it possible? Is there some way of getting at that concept of fairness that's scientific, that's more objective, that, you know, could cut through everybody's different definition of what's fair? So I started researching it and found out, in fact, there is. There is a ton of research going on now in neuroscience, in the archaeology, which is his first story, in lots of different sciences that looks into different aspects of the human sense of fairness. And so I started contacting the scientists who are doing that research, telling them about the project, asking if they'd be interested in participating in it. And people have been wonderfully responsive. And this first story in Pacific Standard is the first concrete result of that. So that's it. Okay, I'm sorry.
Oh no! What I find so interesting about this story, and it's a story about a place north of Vancouver, the city of Vancouver, called Keatley Creek, and what really stood out for me was, you know, when we think about the evolution of humanity and the human species, you know, 2 million years we were hunter gatherers, or I've heard gathering hunters, and in small groups where fairness and scarcity. Seemed to really, you know, that was kind of the issue. But as we moved into more agricultural times and more different technologies, the unequal issues started to occur. But there was something really special about Keatley Creek that you all found. And can you tell us more about, you know, what was unique about that space and how it kind of spoke to an anomaly in the sense of fairness as it's been seen?
Well, sure. And as you just stated, the general opinion amongst anthropologists and historians has always been that agriculture was the real game changer, that once we settled down in agricultural societies, transitioning from that hunter-gatherer stage, that's when inequality really began to evolve. What Brian Hayden, the archaeologist who we worked with at Keatley Creek, had thought was that there was an earlier transitional stage, that it wasn't so much agriculture, but simply the availability of a surplus that made the difference. And so he chose this particular area because he knew that the First Nations people who'd started to settle that area back 5,000 years ago or longer had been essentially hunter-gatherers up till that time. They'd been nomadic, which is one of the key things. They hadn't settled down in villages. But in this particular location, what happened was that the glaciers retreated, you know, back starting 10,000 years ago. And as soon as the glaciers retreated, the salmon started to follow the retreating glaciers upstream and reestablish their own populations. And soon after the salmon, the people followed because they were such a rich resource at that time. They came into this one valley, and it's called the Fraser Canyon. There's about a half-mile stretch of kind of a rocky, narrow gorge where there are exactly 22 ideal places to fish for salmon because it narrows out there, and there's little shelves of rock, which are these fishing rocks. The salmon are really easy to catch. They're right below rapids, and they had dip net technology already. So they could just stand on these rocks and literally dip the salmon out of the pools as they saved up their energy to go up the falls. So it was a great place to fish. There was a warm wind that blew through the gorge at that time of year and made it easy to preserve the salmon. They could just hang them up to dry them. And so they had a plenty of surplus finally, and that enabled them to start to build these villages because they could overwinter there. Before, they hadn't really been able to spend the winter in these harsh valleys in the mountains. They had to go down into the lowlands to survive. But now they could build villages, have plenty of food that they could store for the winter, and given that, they were able to settle down. And that surplus was what Brian Hayden thinks started to change things, because once everyone had just enough to eat, at least enough so they wouldn't starve, they weren't so concerned as they were in hunter-gatherer societies what was done with the surplus. And so he thinks there were greedier personalities always within those societies. They'd been kept in check because in hunter-gatherer societies with scarcity, if you tried to take more than your fair share or not do your fair share of the work, you were booted out as he says. You were kicked out, and that probably meant you were going to die. But once everyone had enough, again, once everyone had enough to eat, it was tolerated for people to start trading with each other, you know, just kind of exchanging stuff with their friends, and that over time evolved into kind of in-groups and out-groups. And over time, he thinks inequality evolved, and what he discovered there was these big, what are called pit houses, that maybe 40 or 50 people all lived in, and there were two distinct sides, a rich side and a poor side, owners and workers. And it was just the archaeological evidence was clear on that particular point. And so then he started to kind of work out the ways that that inequality evolved.
Well, we need to take a quick break, but I want to pick up from, you know, how do we get to this place where we people start essentially giving away their power? And the stories, I mean, just hearing how this, you know, how does this all happen? So when we come right back, we will talk with Alan Honick more about the evolution of fairness, particularly at Keatley Creek. So you're listening to Guylog Radio. I'm Dr. Jeff. We'll be right back.
Tune in to Guylog Radio with Dr. Jeff on TransformationTalkRadio.com as the stories of the universe are revealed in this engaging and creative hit show. Mondays at 1 Pacific Time, 4 Eastern, Dr. Jeff fills the airwaves with Guylog Radio, an epic conversation on self, society, and sustainability. Provocative, educational, transformative, and mythic, Guylog Radio is the place where story seeds the imagination, heals the heart, and inspires personal, social, and planetary evolution.
Did anyone teach you to be a parent? What if there were tools that could make your job a whole lot easier? Glenna Rice invites you to be the questionable parent you truly be in a dynamic teleseries designed to empower parents to know that they know and give you the awareness required to create ease and joy between you and your children. Check out GlennaRice.com to learn more and to book a private session or dial 415-235-2807.
Stiek Medical Center is where you find it all. A healthy space with doctors who care, see, and listen to the whole you. Hi, this is Dr. Darvish. If you have not found an answer to your chronic symptoms, you will find answers here at Holistic Medical Center. Our doctors find the root cause of your symptoms and guide your body towards healing naturally. We transform lives from within. Visit us at drdarvish.com. That's drdarvish.com.
Hi, my name is Dr. Dane here from Access Consciousness. Are you a seeker, a dreamer, one of those people who's always known that there should be greater possibilities available but haven't yet been able to create it as your life? I'd like to help. Go to creatinggreaterpossibilities.com, where there's a free video and audio series created especially for you. Once again, creatinggreaterpossibilities.com. It's free, and it's designed to give you the actual tools that you need to create the life you've always been looking for. creatinggreaterpossibilities.com.
Licensed psychotherapist Kathy DeBono now offers her services through private sessions over secure online video chat or voice-only phone calls if you prefer. You can even choose to use instant messenger or email exchange. Go to KathyIsIn.com to learn more about licensed psychotherapist Kathy DeBono and how she and her unique brand of intuitive counseling can help you achieve the change you want to see in your life. KathyIsIn.com.
The Ascension Foundation, serving to build an interdimensional community. The Ascended Masters invite you to join them in co-creating this mission. Allow the Masters to lead the way in activating the wisdom of your heart consciousness and raising your vibration. You can communicate with them directly by attending apportation events and classes in mediumship, crystal light energy healing, alchemy, master studies, past life regression, and more. For a schedule of classes, workshops, and special events, visit theascensionfoundation.com. That's theascensionfoundation.com.
Hi, you're back on Guylog Radio with me, Dr. Jeff Lineweaver, and our guest today is Alan Honick, storyteller, filmmaker, and researcher into the story and the evolution of fairness and how it's shown up in our worlds. And you know, I have to tell you all, when we separate from breaks, it's so hard to even stop talking about this topic, fairness. I think because sometimes you know, fairness is such a taboo in our society. Just talking about that's not fair. He got more. It sets up a lot of issues. So, you know, how did this kind of taboo issue show up for you all when you were researching? You know, what did you see?
Well, I mean, I'm not quite sure what you're getting at there, but let me see if I can address it from a certain angle. I mean, going back to the hunter-gatherer idea, clearly it was taboo in those hunter-gatherer societies that were facing scarcity all the time to try to take more than your fair share of the food or to not do your fair share of the work. And if you did that, you know, that was the taboo. You were booted out. What happens is, as inequality starts to evolve, for instance, at this Keatley Creek society, is that the definition of fairness is shifted subtly at first, and then all of a sudden you wake up and what used to be taboo, in other words, having more than everybody else has and exploiting that and taking advantage of your position of wealth and power, is no longer taboo. You're not kicked out. In fact, it's the people who don't have the wealth and power and good connections who find themselves holding the short side of the stick. So it's really a matter of who defines fairness in society. That's what we've kind of found in this first story, is that the way people change the definition of fairness is really by changing what's taboo.
Right.
One interesting example, to jump forward to modern times, is, you know, a lot of people have made this point. Back in the 1980s, we had a big financial scandal, the savings and loan scandal. And as a result of that, you know, that was, you know, bankers doing the same thing that bankers did more recently, which is to take advantage of the rules. But they actually broke the rules in that case. There were laws in place in that time. And I think 1,000 bankers went to jail back in the savings and loan scandal in the late 1980s. Today, a lot of those rules were changed. They were changed largely in the 90s and in the early 2000s. And the things that were taboo, the banking practices that were taboo back in the 80s that sent people to jail, were no longer taboo. And so the people who might have gone to jail back then have gotten away scot-free, in fact, have gotten filthy rich off of it. And that's, you know, that's what Occupy Wall Street is up in arms about. So that's it's a matter of who defines fairness in a society. It's a matter of laws. It's a matter of customs and practices. But it's really, you know, where the rubber meets the road in fairness.
You know, it's funny. I was just having a conversation with somebody yesterday about the savings and loan scandals before, and this kind of this change of, like, people don't even seem to remember that. And I, you know, I guess when I put out the idea of taboo, and is that sometimes we define ourselves by what we are not. And I think, you know, if you're saying somebody's if that's that's not fair, you're also saying that, you know, that somebody's being greedy, even if you're not saying it. It's implied that it's greedy, and that, you know, that conversation of greed is an issue. And yet here we have a culture, a North American culture, a global culture built on competition. And so it seems that we've evolved into this place of this, people are always going to be an aggrandizer right now because it seems that's the way that it needs to be. There's a great book out these days called Getting Noticed in a Noisy World. And it's like, if everyone's, you know, a noisy cricket, how do we even figure it out?
Well, you know, it's really a matter of what, you know, it's complicated now because society is so complicated, but what are the practices that social institutions punish, and what are the practices and behaviors that social institutions reward? You know, it's really, you know, it's can be simplified, I think, in some ways to that degree, that what we, you know, the behaviors we choose to punish and reward really define the balance of fairness in a society. You know, now we've chosen not to punish those bankers. We in the 80s we chose to punish them. Why? Good question. And that's one of the things we hope to get at. And I think that's taboos. I mean, what's taboo? What sorts of behaviors are taboo in a society? As that shifts, it's the definition of fairness that's shifting. But, you know, it's not just punishments. I mean, fairness is so basic. It applies to any two-person relationship, a marriage. I mean, take one good example, and there's lots of papers that have been done studying this issue of who does the housework in a marriage. You know, who makes the bed, who does the laundry, who makes dinner, who does this and that. You know, there's always a negotiation, unless you're wealthy and have servants that do all that for you, I suppose, over who's going to do the housework. And everything from a marriage to international conflicts, fairness is, I think, at the root of those negotiations for what's taboo, what sorts of behavior are, you know, rewarded and what's punished.
So in your work, you know, coming back to the Keatley Creek and these pit houses, did you feel like the sense of the story of fairness and how the story has shifted? How did nature influence this story, if at all?
Well, nature influenced it tremendously in providing salmon. I mean, beyond that, I mean, it was just salmon are a good, in certain areas where their runs are strong, they are a very reliable source of food. And in this case, because there was this narrow stretch of river that had ideal places to catch and preserve them, nature provided this bounty that was easy to get and to store that enabled surplus. And that was the key thing here. Without nature in that sense, and I'm not sure that's what you're asking, but that's my first reaction. That's what nature did to make this unfairness possible in this case.
The surplus.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, that's Brian Hayden's theory.
Yeah, well, it's interesting because you say, you know, inequality is not necessarily unfair, but fairness is the process of how inequality evolves. And I think that that's, you know, what's so interesting to me about kind of the nature connection is, you know, nature can giveth as much as nature can taketh away. But it seems to me, particularly, you know, when I think about the story of sustainability now, we seem to be, you know, so unaware that nature can take it away because we have such surplus. And so when I'm trying to put myself back in the time of being in a pit house and how there could even be, how could you have poor and upper class sides if you're even living in one house? So what did you find?
Well, the story, as Brian tells it, and it makes sense to me because it's the same processes that are going on today again, is that it starts off fairly innocently. You know, you start off with a fairly equal society, but then you have surplus. So everybody's belly is basically filled as long as they're willing to do a minimum of work. So if someone else is a little more ambitious, the aggrandizer idea, and has some idea for how he or she might get ahead, in this case mostly it would be he's, they would say, for instance, I'd say to you, Jeff, you know, I think your daughter's pretty good looking. I'd like to marry her. So I'm going to give you, I've got an extra bushel of salmon or a couple extra bushels of salmon here. I'll give those to you if you'll give me your daughter in marriage. And, you know, that's competition for brides is one of the big things in any society. So you say, sure, Alan, I could use a couple extra bushels of salmon. And I've got a daughter. I've got a few daughters here, so you can have this one, even though she seems to be. Anyway, you know, it sounds a little sexist now, and obviously it is in our society, but that's probably how it worked then. So it starts off with these little relationships between individuals, friends, you know, acquaintances, where there start to be, you know, just economic relationships where there never were economic relationships before. People just shared in hunter-gatherer societies. So as you start to build these economic relationships, you build little cliques, you know, in-groups and out-groups. So eventually, as you start to through other strategies, like feasting is one of the strategies they use, competitive feast, where, you know, I invite you to my feast and you eat all the stuff I give you, so you owe me now. And you have to invite me for a feast. And so you build up these debts, in a sense, in these economic relationships. And then you say, you know, you have a few allies. Is that a break coming again? I heard something there.
Yes.
Okay. Should I try to wrap this up, or should you need to go to a break? I could pick it up at the
end. We have about 2 minutes before a break.
Okay. I'm sorry. I shouldn't have jumped at that. Anyway, so what starts off fairly innocently starts to build up till I have a little group of friends who have all got these economic relationships, let's say maybe 10, 20 of us. And so I say to my group of friends, I think I want to own that particular fishing rock. If you support me and say I own that particular fishing rock, and remember there's only 22 fishing rocks in this area, then I'm going to let you fish there. You know, we'll all share it, but I'm the owner and you're my friends, and so you're going to support me in saying to the rest of the group that I own that rock. And so you get that concept of private property because you get these alliances built up. And so that's what starts off as favoritism, I'm going to help my friends, becomes cronyism. We all have this little in-group that supports each other. And then eventually, you know, it turns into outright corruption and this class society that he that Hayden found there that was, you know, two distinct classes living within one big pit house. Okay. Anyway, so that I hope got at that issue.
No, that's great. And let's pick up from there at the pit house. Everybody, we're bookmarking things right here. We'll be right back. We're going to take a quick break. And I'm Dr. Jeff Lineweaver, and you're listening to Guylog Radio with our special guest, Alan Honig. We'll be right back.
Hi, this is Dr. Pat. Did you know most coffee, not all, have hidden dangers lurking in it? A recent investigation into grocery store coffee revealed three dangers. First, modern coffee farming produces dangerously high acidity and caffeine. Second, mold content in grocery store coffee contains dangerous toxins. Yuck! Third, government agencies have found grocery store coffee containing 400 times the carcinogens allowed in drinking water. You will be relieved to know that Camano Island Coffee Roasters takes the worry out of your sip of coffee. Imagine how your coffee tastes without mold, carcinogens, or poison. Get your free coffee report, The Five Hidden Dangers Lurking in Your Coffee Cup. Visit NakedTruthAboutCoffee.com to get your free copy now. That's NakedTruthAboutCoffee.com. And check out Camano Island Coffee Roasters.
Are you feeling stuck? Do you want to be free from fears and doubts and finally feel good about yourself, but you just don't know how to get there? Dr. Schaub's Accelerated Breakthrough Program provides you with the tools and solutions to go beyond your limitations and achieve self-empowered confidence. Call for your free phone consultation at 866-903-MIND. Visit CellularWisdom.com. That's CellularWisdom.com.
Tune into Intuit University, compassionate guidance, connecting you to your inner wisdom with internationally renowned psychic and medium, Sherry Dillard. Each Thursday at 12 Pacific, 3 Eastern. Get ready for an hour of practical spirituality, fun, and a magic carpet ride into the spirit realm. This hit show is a combination of call-in readings and intuitive mentoring, as Sherry supports, inspires, and empowers you to create your highest good in relationships, career, finances, life purpose, spirituality, and more. For more information, visit SherryDillard.com.
Ladies, are you living an inspired life? Do you yearn for a more passionate, dream-filled life? Here's Linda Joy, founder of Aspire Magazine, and she has a gift for you.
Aspire has launched its Mission to Inspire initiative with a commitment to give away 100,000 one-year digital subscriptions to women around the globe. Every subscription comes with a multitude of free gifts from our team inspiration partners.
To claim it all, go to aspiremag.net today. No purchase necessary, and live an inspired life.
Join Lisa Kay, international business consultant and mentor, and host of the hit show Success and Empowerment, as she combines a voracious appetite for learning and a life mission to understand and simplify the complex as she delivers a recipe for your unique talent. Lisa's intuitive ability to ask the right question has set her apart as she engages the most inspiring people in the world to tell their story. Tune in each Tuesday at 2 Pacific at TransformationTalkRadio.com.
We're back on Guylog Radio, and today our guest is Alan Honig, filmmaker, storyteller, researcher, and most recently have published in the Pacific Standard Magazine. And Alan, people want to know more about you, your work, and also go and read this fascinating article. Where should they go?
Well, you go to Pacific Standard Magazine. If you just Google Pacific Standard Magazine, that'll come up pretty quickly. As of now, this story's been out about a month there, and it's still, at this point, is on the front page. I'm not sure how long it's going to remain on the front page, but right now it's easy to find. It's in the lower left corner of the big picture of some salmon fillets hanging up. You can always find it there. It'll be there permanently if you just go to Pacific Standard and look for The Evolution of Fairness. So that's how you find it. The address is, if you want to go directly to the URL, is just psmag.com.
Great, great. Okay, and we will also tweet that and post that for everyone. Okay, so when we last left for break, we were kind of we'd stopped at the Pitt House, but the reason why we got there was you were talking about how sometimes the innocence of just social interactions lead us to a place, and you're talking about the variability of human personality and surplus. Yeah, so why don't you tell us more about what you all found?
Sure. Well, I mean, I think going back to the first point about what was found, the process of favoritism and cronyism evolving. I mean, we naturally, as human beings, we help our friends. We do it all the time. You know, you help the people you know best, and you certainly help your relatives. You help your children. You want to give your children a good start in life. That's just a natural instinct. But, you know, it works fine as long as in those hunter-gatherer groups, it worked fine because it was essentially one big family. People were interrelated, and they were all, it's because of the scarcity idea, again, we're all willing to help each other. Surplus, again, changes that. It makes, you know, that availability of surplus lets those greedier personalities express themselves, and they do it in the ways we've been talking about. What that leads to eventually, though, is this redefinition of fairness, which is where the problems kind of begin to evolve, because that kind of that locks in that idea that it's fair for some people to begin life and to throughout their life have an advantage in opportunity over others. And that's what really begins to become unfair. Again, the inequality is not necessarily unfair. Even today, we think people who work harder and contribute more deserve a little bit more return for their efforts and their talent and their creativity. But it's when that becomes just a greater opportunity that's locked in, as in the form of inheritance. You know, you're just born to wealthy parents, you're born in wealthy circumstances, or any kind of privilege that gives you an advantage, it can begin to become unfair. You know, we talk of even conservatives today say they want equality of opportunity, not equality of outcome. And that sounds good, but when you really start to analyze what goes in, what would go in to creating true equality of opportunity for everybody, it's pretty daunting because we have so many things in the modern world that give people an advantage, a leg up in life.
So, you know, what I find so interesting about what your research is finding, and to me, so when I, you know, I hear a lot of people, well sometimes we romanticize the past. So I hear a lot of romantic notions, and, you know, there are a lot of folks who are, you know, in the current day, you know, just say, well, I think there's this belief that we couldn't have always been greedy in this way, and kind of the nobility of our ancestors, or nobility of noble savages, they did it different way. They did it differently, and I hear this a lot in some permaculture communities, and kind of earth-based communities, very Gaia-centric and permaculture villages, and it seems like this is what we've always been dealing with. It's the same human thing.
Well, unfortunately, but just factually, it's probably true. You know, things were, you know, fairer in a sense in those hunter-gatherer societies, a condition we lived in for 2 million years probably. But, you know, again, if Brian's right, those personalities, that variability, just natural variability in personality was always there. It's just that the norms of fairness that existed in those hunter-gatherer societies would punish unfair behavior, uncooperative, greedy behavior. And so it just wasn't tolerated. It's just you have to shift the norms of fairness through whatever means you can if you want to change that and enable inequality and of in all ways, just not just wealth, but inequality of opportunity in all ways. So it's that variability is key, and that's actually just to move on briefly. The second story that's going to come out in the near future is, you know, starting to look at what are the sources of that natural variability in our individual senses of fairness. And, you know, how much of that is actually genetic? How much of it is learned and acquired through socialization? So what we actually look at in this second story is some experiments that have been done to test the sense of fairness and the sense of altruism in 15-month-old infants. And it was some researchers at the University of Washington who came up with a couple of ingenious experiments, I think, to test that, and found surprising results, to me surprising, that there was a definite sense of fairness in some of those 15-month-old infants, and some of them were altruistic sharers, which is another the second experiment, but not all of them. It was about a quarter of the sample at age 15 months had a strong sense of fairness and a strong desire to share altruistically. The others on a spectrum all the way to not sharing or not being concerned about fairness at all. So it's not absolute. It's always a mix. It's complex. But there is, I think, that indicates there's probably some genetic component to it. Because how much, in my mind, how much can you learn about fairness and altruism at age 15 months? Some, but not certainly not everything in my mind.
Huh. Yeah. Well, that opens up a lot of questions. I think of some place like Gymboree, where I have a 7-year-old and a 1-year-old, and it's amazing to see all this stuff coming at them. And so my 1-year-old just turned 1 last week, actually, and still there's so much stuff out there, and yet I've certainly lived and been in other cultures where children don't have so much, but are still, So I don't know. It seems like an interesting question, you know, cross-culturally, how the altruistic versus kind of the greed factor would show up. But I noticed in your first article, you talked about the rise of, you know, just not just salmon, but other kind of prestige goods. And so when I'm thinking of the prestige goods for, a shishi child or not shishi child, you know, stuff, how did that show up? And what do you think of it?
Well, prestige goods, they existed then. They were just, jewelry and, really nicely made tools, just any kind of precious special object that took a lot of handwork to create. And that's what they found. They found these on the rich side of the pit houses and didn't find them on the poor sides of the pit houses. They would just find more utilitarian kinds of tools on the poor sides. But they're a way of signaling wealth and status. They always have been. I mean, to have a Mercedes and fancy jewelry today, or a big house and whatever the things are that signal your success as an individual, that's what people strive for in today's society. Not all societies, but certainly in American society now, that's what kind of is valued. Celebrity is certainly valued. I mean, look at the shows. Another story we're going to do soon is a study that was done to study the changing values in TV shows from the 1960s through the 2000s. And for instance, in 1960s, one of the, and I left something out there. It's in the age group between 9 and 11, what's called the tweens.
Uh-huh.
And the most popular show in the 60s in that age group was the Andy Griffith Show, I think, and the Lucy Show. You know, shows that really extolled communitarian values, small town helping each other, everybody more or less being equal in everything together, kind of, more like a hunter-gatherer society, people sharing and communitarian values. In the 2000s, the most popular show in that age group was Hannah Montana and American Idol. Shows that just extol the value of celebrity, getting rich quick for just being famous for no other reason than being famous, really. And that's so much what drives popular culture today. And so you ask yourself, what kinds of values is that teaching? And I think they kind of tend towards unfair values. Now, this brings in another thing, empathy. is one of the biggest underlying emotions and processes that undergirds our sense of fairness. That's well known. And empathy is variable too. That's where it gets, you know, going back to this story of what causes the individual variability. Empathy has certainly got some genetic component to it. I mean, there's a lot of work that's been done in one component of it, which is the hormone oxytocin, which is well known to make us feel warmer and more trusting to our to others. And there's been shown through a number of tests that there's one variant of a gene that controls an oxytocin receptor, and only about a quarter of the population has that gene or that combination of genes. And those people test consistently on several different experiments to be more empathetic, more sensitive to the states of minds of their fellow human beings than the people who don't have that particular genetic variant. So there's a genetic component there to empathy, and that underlies our sense of fairness.
Wow. Well, there's so much to ask, but we are running up on a break again, of course. Yeah. So we're going to take a break, and we'll be right back. You're listening to Dialogue Radio with guest Alan Honig. We'll be right back.
Tune in to Dialogue Radio with Dr. Jeff on TransformationTalkRadio.com as the stories of the universe are revealed in this engaging and creative hit show. Mondays at 1 Pacific Time, 4 Eastern, Dr. Jeff fills the airwaves with Dialogue Radio, an epic conversation on self, society, and sustainability. Provocative, educational, transformative, and mythic, Dialogue Radio is the place where story seeds the imagination, heals the heart, and inspires personal, social, and planetary evolution.
Have you ever considered what money and sex have in common? Brenda St. Louis, founder of Know That You Know, explores the energies of debt, money, sex, and our bodies. In her 4-week intensive Debt Into Delight, Getting Intimate with Your Digits, she tickles all those places we don't want to look at, infusing everything with exuberance. Would you be willing to have more money? Would you be willing to have more of you? Explore more of Brenda St. Louis at knowthatyouknow.com.
Tune in each Monday at noon Pacific, 3 Eastern Time on TransformationTalkRadio.com to the Elizabeth Anglin Show, your psychic connection to your soul's path. Elizabeth takes you to the Universal Etheric Space Library, where soul records and life lesson plans are stored. This live call-in show will help you decide what your life plan is through the help of your guides and guardian angels. Visit ElizabethAnglin.com or call 1-888-640-4893 to schedule your reading with psychic medium, animal communicator, Elizabeth Anglin.
How would you like increased health and vitality? How would you like to avoid the onset of disease as well as slow the aging process? This is all possible through a simple, safe, and natural process. Every day, we are either moving toward wellness or away from wellness.
Hi, I'm Mary Jane Mack. I'd like to be your partner in achieving optimal health. Contact me now at MaryJaneMack.com or call 425-392-0659. Visit MaryJaneMack.com.
Laura Longley is on a mission to remove stuckness from your life for good and replace it with happiness. Tune in each Tuesday at 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern for Blue Heron Wisdom Radio with Laura Longley, where authentic change takes flight. Say yes to that inspired you and goodbye to your stuckness as Laura and her guests deliver powerful ways to work through common problems in this fun and unique hit show. Check out Blue Heron Wisdom Radio with Laura Longley on TTRNetwork.com.
We're back on Dialogue Radio, and today we have guest Alan Honig, and we've been talking about the evolution of fairness. You can learn more about Alan and Alan's work at Pacific Standard Magazine. That's psmag.com. All right. So, you know, we have 15 minutes left, what I find kind of just mind-blowing, and occasionally this topic just kind of almost sends me into a fetal position, but what I hope listeners walk away with, and we'll talk more about this, is that we have this interesting connection between who we are as a species and the story that we've developed since 2 million, 40,000, 10,000 years ago, and particularly 10,000, starting with the Keatley Creek examples, to the now of our information society and the kind of evolution of fairness. And obviously, that's the name of Alan's article. But Alan, you know, you've talked about this kind of equation of this variability of, fairness equals the variability of human personality plus surplus. And that equals, how the story of fairness is told. And so that makes me think about here we are in an information society. And a society, as you were saying, we've gone from communitarian values to Hannah Montana. And, and I keep hearing, stories and studies that say that kids nowadays, what they want to aspire to be is famous. They don't know what they want to do. But being famous is an important future goal. And so, how are you? It sounds like you're with this new story coming out, looking at the human side of things. How is this making you think about the world we live in and how we tell the stories of the world we live in?
Well, it makes me worry, frankly. There are certainly a lot of positive things to say about modern technology. I live with modern technology. I spend my whole day on the computer. My work gets out through the computer. I use technology to make videos, and I use the internet to get them out there. It's great. However, by relying perhaps a little too much on that electronic kind of the electronic way of relating to each other through Facebook, through Twitter, through all the things that we use, we perhaps are leaving something out, and that is just literally that face-to-face contact that evokes empathy. We can intellectually understand feeling empathy for people at a distance, but there are real biological things that happen when we look in each other's eyes and touch each other that evoke physical reactions that are important to treating each other fairly, to just get it down to cases. By relying too much on an electronic way of relating to each other and not doing both, because I think certainly both have their role in life, we might lose something. There again, I keep bringing up other studies. There has been a significant amount of work done to study the evolution of empathy in recent decades. And what it has found is through a test that's given to college students all over the country every year that measures their self-reported sense of empathy towards others, that there has been a sharp decline, particularly over the last decade, that tracking, and they don't have a real causal relationship here, just a hypothesis, but tracking in time, when people started relating to each other more on computers through email and eventually through Facebook, et cetera, they started reporting a great decline in their personal sense of empathy, in their caring for other people. Why? I think it might be because of that, and that scares me. So how do we keep them both? I think those of us who have a close circle of friends, of local friends, and get together with them frequently and have a big family and spend time with our family, we don't lose that. But there are people who become isolated. And relying too much on just that electronic relationship can be dangerous, I think. It can undermine empathy, which eventually will undermine our ability to relate fairly to each other. That's my concern.
I think a lot about the role of storytelling, and I'm a performing storyteller I do a lot of work with on the role of rites of passage and connection to nature, but there's that real connection with the story and nature and one on one, and I have noticed that when I talk with people about story and storytelling, that nowadays people take very much a sense of storytelling is synonymous with monologuing about oneself, which when I first heard the term aggrandizers, I thought about this whole idea of we're all We're all free agents, and we need our own publicists and everything because we're in a world that's about monologuing instead of storytelling. And it reminds me of what you're saying in terms of this the technology interface versus eye to eye. There's something you can't deny when you're with someone. And you know, what did you And I know that going back now to the pit houses. I know that there's lots of ritual and connectedness in there. And clearly there were class differences that you've been able to determine and how technology impacted that. But nonetheless, there seemed to be some, it's not like they were societies that just were completely falling apart, unsustainable, so to speak. And so how did ritual show up in your investigation or artifacts of ritual?
Well, actually, in this particular investigation, we didn't talk about that a lot. The archaeologist who's taken over that dig from Brian Payton is investigating the role of ritual in that society. Brian hadn't done that much at that point. But I had another anthropologist who we interviewed, that I've not story about yet. Talks a lot about the relationship to ritual in the early Native American societies and in fairness.
It's actually not a positive story because it was through the control of ritual.
It was a very stratified society in a way,
but the people who had been out and had spirits and convinced the others that they, the shamans, who said, I've got the ear of the gods or the spirits or whatever it was, and I'm the one who can translate their wishes for our society back to you because they're talking to me, that was another way of controlling the definition of fairness. There were positive things in it that it held the society together and gave, again, it redefined fairness, but it was also used to control. It was used for authoritarian purposes. It's always a mixed picture. It's just like these hunter-gatherer societies were harmonious and they were sustainable, but it wasn't without conflict, certainly intergroup conflict, even in the hunter-gatherer societies. Anyway, I'll stop there for now.
Yeah. Well, we had a little bit of interference. I don't know if you heard that, but I wanted to just say that I think it's fascinating. But what you're saying in connection to the shamans kind of having the ear to the gods, controlling, and it's boy, we humans sure are a complicated lot, aren't we?
We are. And the only way I could try, and this is, again, one of the motivations behind this project, fairness just gave this one dimension to look at human relations through, kind of just a lens, a perspective, that I thought maybe we could get a handle on it and try to analyze some of the complexities of human society through this one perspective of fairness. And we're trying, but it becomes pretty complicated, believe me, all in itself. Yeah.
Well, it's opening up the shaman opens up to kind of spiritual fairness and all the things that go along with that, but it's still through that lens of fairness. And listen, we are running out of time. I want everyone to go to psmag.com, look for The Evolution of Fairness, and you'll see Alan's article there. It is fantastic, a must read. And Alan, you have a new article coming out in the future. Let us know. We'll let everyone else know. Maybe you can come back and we can continue the conversation at that time.
Sure, Jeff. I'd be glad to.
Well, thank you very much for coming today, Alan.
Well, thanks for having me on.
And I want to thank all of you for tuning into Guylog Radio. Guylog Radio is a place where story seeds the imagination and inspires you towards personal, social, and planetary evolution. Please join me every Monday at 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern on Guylog Radio, where we'll have some of the most gifted storytellers, social entrepreneurs, change agents, speakers, and authors helping you make sustainability epic. Have a great week. Bye.
You've been listening to Guylog Radio with Dr. Jeff Leinenweber. Tune in each week, Monday at 1 Pacific Time, 4 Eastern Time, on TransformationTalkRadio.com for more transformative stories of the universe. Dr. Jeff asks us to engage in the storytelling process of Guylog, an epic conversation on self, society, and sustainability.
explore the questions that challenge us all by asking, what do we make when we tell stories of healing the world and transforming ourselves? How does it influence personal and social evolution? What does it mean to take a storytelling perspective on sustainability? For more about Dialogue Radio, visit www.guylog.com. That's guylog.com. See you next week on TransformationTalkRadio.com.
Did anyone teach you to be a parent? What if there were tools that could make your job a whole lot easier? Glenna Rice invites you to be the questionable parent you truly be in a dynamic teleseries designed to empower parents to know that they know and give you the awareness required to create ease and joy between you and your children. Check out GlennaRice.com to learn more and to book a private session. Or dial 415-235-2807.
Stiek Medical Center is where you find it all. A healthy space with doctors who care, see, and listen to the whole you. Hi, this is Dr. Darvish. If you have not found an answer to your chronic symptoms, you will find answers here at Holistic Medical Center. Our doctors find the root cause of your symptoms and guide your body towards healing naturally. We transform lives from within. Visit us at drdarvish.com. That's drdarvish.com.
Hi, my name is Dr. Dane here from Access Consciousness. Are you a seeker, a dreamer, one of those people who's always known that there should be greater possibilities available but haven't yet been able to create it as your life? I'd like to help. Go to creatinggreaterpossibilities.com, where there's a free video and audio series created especially for you. Once again, creatinggreaterpossibilities.com. It's free, and it's designed to give you the actual tools that you need to create the life you've always been looking for. creatinggreaterpossibilities.com.
Licensed psychotherapist Kathy DeBono now offers her services through private sessions over secure online video chat or voice-only phone calls if you prefer. You can even choose to use instant messenger or email exchange. Go to KathyIsIn.com to learn more about licensed psychotherapist Kathy DeBono and how she and her unique brand of intuitive counseling can help you achieve the change you want to see in your life. KathyIsIn.com.
The Ascension Foundation, serving to build an interdimensional community. The Ascended Masters invite you to join them in co-creating this mission. Allow the Masters to lead the way in activating the wisdom of your heart consciousness and raising your vibration. You can communicate with them directly by attending apportation events and classes in mediumship, crystal light energy healing, alchemy, master studies, past life regression, and more. For a schedule of classes, workshops, and special events, visit theascensionfoundation.com. That's theascensionfoundation.com.
You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio. Our hosts are setting a new standard for a fresh kind of talk radio, creating conversations that are transforming the world, one listener at a time. Transformation Talk Radio's mission is to broadcast a distinct blend of live talk radio interviews with a mix of uplifting and intelligent news, educational and practical information. Topics range from personal development to critical issues relevant to a rapidly changing world. Stay tuned. Transformation Talk Radio starts at the top of every hour.